Fox, inside low left, Eric Williams. Stockton steals. There it is. Stockton stole the ball. Stockton stole the ball. He's the all-time leader in the history of the game. 2,311. Stockton left to right. Over to Carmelo. 50 foot of the base. Yes. Stockton the ball. Stockton with the ball, front court left. He looks to Carmelo. He's got him low. The mailman jumps it. Shot up. It's in. He did it. He did it. John Stockton to Carmelo. John Stockton with 11 assists. They're on their feet. A new NBA assist king.
Russell will inbound at half court.
Uh-oh.
Stockton, open three. Hit it! John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals.
Welcome into the Utah Jazz front court. Name change pending. This is your host, Brian Preece. Find me on Twitter at bpreece24. That's at bpreece24. You can also follow us on Facebook at Name Change Pending or on Instagram at Name Change Pending 24. Follow our other hosts, Tommy Girone at Ruthless Lupe, that's at RUTHLESS_LUPE, and Josh Keel at Rise and Shout, that's at RYSENSHOUT. So as I mentioned in the title, as we always do with Name Change Pending, we're going to be talking about the Jazz front court today. Unfortunately, I covered the practice yesterday afternoon, and I had no way of knowing, but we just talked to a few Jazz guards and Quinn Snyder, so maybe I should have held off on the guard line and done that one today and the front line yesterday. But alas, here we are. We're just going to continue, and we'll see what we can figure out. We'll start with the heart of the Utah Jazz, the anchor of their defense, Rudy Gobert. He's entering his seventh NBA season. He's the two-time reigning Defensive Player of the Year. Last year, he had the ninth highest field goal percentage in NBA history. Going into the last couple games of the year, he was top two or three, I remember, and then missed a few shots. It doesn't take much to drop a lot of spots in that kind of a record category. Also, last season, he had career highs with 15.9 points per game and 12.9 rebounds per game and 6 screen assists per game. So those who aren't familiar with screen assists, it's when you set a screen that leads directly to a basket. So those screen assists led to 13.8 points per game for the Utah Jazz. So a really big part of their offense as far as Rudy coming out, especially when he sets screens high on the wing and up high at the top of the key for Jazz guards to come around. As far as what I expect from Rudy this season, I look at this Jazz offense and the shooters that they've brought in, and I think Rudy's going to have a lot more space around the basket, more space than he's ever had in his career. I expect his scoring to go up and his field goal percentage to improve, if only slightly. The thing about Rudy this year is, just based on history, look for injuries. Be aware of that. He has tended to get hurt since he started getting significant playing time with the Jazz. He's tended to get hurt every other year, and it definitely could be just coincidence. I'm not saying that Rudy's an injury-prone player, and every other year something's going to happen and he's going to miss a bunch of games. But in 2015-16, he played 61 games after a knee injury, and then in 2017-18, he played 56 games after a knee injury, and then if you remember, in 17-18, he also hurt his knee in the playoffs against the Clippers, where I believe he missed one game and then came back, but he was definitely hobbled in that series, you could tell, in spite of the Jazz winning. In the FIBA World Cup over the summer, Rudy played for Team France, where he averaged 13.9 points per game, 12.5 rebounds, and 2.6 blocks, along with 2.6 assists. For me, I think with the changes in this offense, the increased spacing that they're going to have, if Rudy can increase his scoring average to 19+, which going from 15.9, so just barely under 16 to 19, I don't think is a huge stretch. The only concern with him upping that scoring average is whether or not there's just going to be the opportunities available. There's so many options on this team. It's going to be tough for Rudy to get. It's going to be tough for everybody in this team to get as many touches and shots as they are accustomed to in their career. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. But if he can increase that scoring average to 19+, that's going to make the Jazz so tough to defend. As Rudy sets those screens and then he rolls off of them to the basket, he flashes for those lob dunks, he gets his offensive rebound putbacks. This could be a huge year for Rudy Gobert. I mean, on the outlandish side, and I'm not trying to make a prediction of this, but if Rudy can get into the 20 to 21 points per game, 12 to 14 rebounds per game, which isn't unreasonable. He averaged 12.9 last year, and 2 to 3 blocks. He wins the Defensive Player of the Year again. One, the Jazz are going to be a top 5 defense again, and with the offense around him, probably a top 5 offense. And two, if Rudy could put up those types of numbers, I think he could be in the MVP conversation, which would be incredible and honestly kind of unexpected. I am going to be making some predictions as far as All-Stars go for the Utah Jazz in an episode that I'll release Monday morning. But I think Rudy's got a chance to make his first All-Star team. One interesting stat is Rudy is the only person in NBA history to make an All-NBA team and not make the All-Star team. He's done that twice now. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say Rudy's due to make the All-Star team. We move on to Headband Joe Ingles, the Australian sensation that Jazz Nation loves. Joe's entering his 6th season. He's one of only 2 Jazz men to play 82 games last year. That was his 3rd straight season of 82 games played. And for a guy that looks like a high school math teacher, that's pretty fantastic for Joe Ingles. Jazz fans love him. Last year, he averaged career highs of... He shot 53.3% from 2 and averaged 12.1 points, 5.7 assists, and 1.2 steals per game. Joe's game, he's an excellent defender. You wouldn't think it to look at him, but he's got quick hands, and he's got an incredibly high basketball IQ, which helps him get into the right position to guard guys both on ball and off the ball. And he's just a pest, whether it be him talking crap or just getting into guys. He never backs down. I love Joe Ingles. He's fantastic. He's the kind of player that everybody hates if he is playing against your team, and you love him if he's on your team. Jazz fans can attest to that, I think. So the question that I have with Joe coming into this season is he going to be a starter? Skill-wise and what he's done with this franchise, absolutely he deserves to be a starter. But I think that Joe has the humility and will understand understand is probably the wrong phrase. I think that Quinn Snyder will be able to impress upon Joe that he can be more beneficial to the team if he's coming off the bench, if he's only playing, you know, reduces minutes to 25 to 27 minutes a game, occasionally stretching that into the 30 minutes range. Where the Jazz, I think they're going to have a starting lineup, 7 or 8 guys deep. He will start some games this year. I just don't think he's going to be a consistent starter. Look for Joe to start 20 to 25 games, come off the bench in the rest of the games, and lead that second unit. And that'll just depend on matchups as the season goes along. But the important thing for Joe Ingles is that I see him being in the Jazz closing 5 more often than not. In the FIBA World Cup over the summer with Australia, Joe had an excellent World Cup. He averaged 10.5 points per game, 6.1 rebounds, and 5.6 assists. He was passing phenomenally out there in China. And so that's something he looks to bring back to this Jazz offense. Last year with the second unit, especially that Derek Favors, Joe Ingles pick and roll. Joe Ingles served a lot as a facilitator, and I think if we can take the ball out of his hands a little bit more, get him open looks in the corners, he's going to be that much more dangerous because he'll have the ability to facilitate, but it won't be required of him, saving him some energy. He's a great passer. I do expect him to increase his assists per game, which like 5.7 last year is not a number to sneeze at, but I could see him bumping that up to around 7. And then, like I said, he should be getting more open looks in the corner for this Jazz team. We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll talk about Jazz newcomer Bojan Bogdanović. Thank you for listening to this episode of Name Change Pending. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Name Change Pending and subscribe to get the newest episodes of the podcast and to check out photos of hosts Josh Keel, Tommy Jerome, and Brian Preece as we travel the continent to do what we love, watch sports. Also, I know you've got a lot going on today, but if you could take 2 minutes out of your busy schedule to give the podcast a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice, we would greatly appreciate it. Those algorithms can be tricky, and all I know is that 5-star ratings jump us up the lists. So thanks for tuning in, and now back to the show. Welcome back to Name Change Pending. This is your host, Brian Preece. We're talking about the Utah Jazz front court today. We've already covered Rudy Gobert and Joe Ingles. Go back and check that out. One more note on Rudy Gobert. I saw him at practice yesterday, and that man is huge. I bet he added 10 to 15 pounds of muscle this offseason, and that's going to be a boon for him near the basket, getting those offensive rebounds, putback dunks, and just muscling larger guys out of the paint. Next, we're going to talk about newcomer Bojan Bogdanović. This is a guy I'm personally really excited about. I scouted him all season and thought he would be a perfect addition for the Jazz. He's entering his eighth season in the NBA, his first with the Jazz. He's an excellent shooter, both on the catch and off the dribble. Last year, he shot over 40% from three, or not last year, each of the last two seasons, he shot over 40% from three and shot 57.5% in effective field goal percentage last year. We talked about that yesterday with Mike Conley specifically, that effective field goal percentage evens out two-point attempts, three-point attempts, and free throws and gives you an across-the-board number. Last year, Bogdanović, after Indiana's Victor Oladipo went down with injury, he averaged a career-high 18 points per game, 4.1 rebounds, and 2 assists. And like I mentioned with Oladipo, Bogdanović took over that Indiana offense. He ran everything. He facilitated everything with that team. And so he's going to be taking a step back with the Jazz and really becoming the second or third option. I think it's going to be huge for him. He's going to get so many good looks, and he's going to surprise a lot of people. He's probably going to be the starting power forward for a majority of games with the Jazz, and he was ranked 48th in the ESPN Top 100. That's something I didn't mention with Rudy or Joe Ingles. Rudy came into the year ranked 14th in the ESPN Top 100. I think you could argue he might have deserved to be 11 or 12. Joe Ingles was 62nd. The only team in the NBA with five players ranked in the ESPN Top 100, top 62, I believe. And that's pretty exciting for me. I can't wait to see this Jazz team. A little bit more in-depth into Bogdanović. Like I said, he's an incredible shooter. He's a very good ball handler. He can play a role similar to what Joe Ingles did last year as far as running the second unit if they want him to. To me, I really think Bojan Bogdanović is the most important addition to this team. One of our other hosts, Tommy Jerome, we sat down and were watching some playoff basketball. We were watching a Celtics-Pacers game last year in April, and I was just going over the whole scouting report for Bojan Bogdanović. This is a guy I can't wait to see in a Jazz uniform and see what Quinn Snyder is able to do with his skills on the offensive side of the ball. It's going to be a lot of fun. And defensively, I really don't think that Derek Favors is a great defensive player, but I don't think the Jazz are going to suffer on the defensive side. Bogdanović is a legitimate 6'8". He's big. He's got a strong upper body, and he's going to be able to hang with power forwards across the NBA, especially as teams go smaller and smaller. Up next for the Jazz, we're going to talk about Royce O'Neal. Royce is entering his third season with the Jazz. He is one of two Jazz men, along with Joe Ingles, to play 82 games last season. Royce is the best perimeter defender on the team. He averaged career highs of 20.4 minutes per game, 5.2 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 1.5 assists per game last year. Royce isn't a great ball handler. He's got some flash and some flair in there, but he does have the ability to create straight line drives. So if on a catch and shoot attempt, the defender closes out too hard, too fast, Royce has the ability to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket. He's just not going to be going side to side a whole lot. Royce O'Neal really could be a breakout defender for the Jazz. I think Jazz fans know what he is, and I have heard some talk around the NBA about people expecting him to be a breakout player with the Jazz. And I kind of want to amend my statement. I have it written down here that he could be a breakout defender. But honestly, Royce could break into this starting lineup. He could be one of the seven or eight guys that I think have starting capability on this team. And he's going to be a guy playing on a smaller deal right now, but he'll be a free agent this next offseason. I wouldn't be surprised to see Royce O'Neal play himself into between $9 and $15 million a year coming on next season. So whether the Jazz can retain him or not, we'll have to take a look and see at that. But as for this season, he's going to be fantastic on this team. As I mentioned, he's the best perimeter defender. He's got the upper body strength to play against most power forwards in the league. He can match up against bigger guys. But he's also got the length and athleticism to defend quicker players. In the playoffs last year, he was their primary defender against James Harden. And he honestly played pretty well in that role. I think Royce is comfortable defending the 1-4 positions, and I really do expect him to become an integral piece of this team. Like I said, I expect him to get some starts along the way. He's going to take his minutes per game from 20 last year up to as much as 27 to 30 minutes per game. And that's really one of the only issues I see with this Jazz team is how are they going to get playing time for so many good players. It'll be an interesting thing to watch. And up next with the Jazz front court, we're going to talk about George Niang. Niang is entering his fourth season as third with the Jazz after playing his first year in Indiana. Last year, he played 59 games. He averaged career highs of 4 points per game, 1.5 rebounds. I think Niang's role off the bench is going to increase this year. He could be a key contributor. He's got deceptive athleticism. He's a really good shooter. He's a good ball handler. I think Niang is a guy who is going to take up some of those power forward minutes in the backup role. I could see him playing alongside Ed Davis a lot. Niang really is just a testament to the Jazz player development system. This is a guy who, coming out of Iowa State, put up some really good college numbers, but wasn't necessarily an NBA player at Iowa State. But he's changed his game around from more of an interior post player to extending his shooting range out to the three-point line and improving his athleticism. So when I watched Niang last year, he probably made the most improvement on the team, just like I said, developing his body, adapting his game. I don't anticipate George ever being an all-star level player. He probably may not ever be a great player or even a regular starter, but Niang is the perfect kind of rotation player that you need for the Utah Jazz, a guy who, if he needs to come in and play 20 minutes, he can, and he's going to give you energy, and he's going to make the right plays and play smart. But if you just don't have the time for him and he plays 10 minutes, you're still going to get all those intangibles, and he's going to give you just as much effort in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or 30 minutes. It won't matter. He's a smart defensive player, if a little bit limited athletically. He's a good shooter, and like I said, he's going to bring great energy off the bench. So I'm excited to watch George Niang develop this year. Now we move on to big Ed Davis. Ed Davis is coming into his 10th NBA season. It's going to be his first with the Jazz. Ed Davis is an extraordinary rebounder. He's got a career average of 12 rebounds per 36 minutes played. And he's not going to play 36 minutes a game with the Jazz by any means. He's going to be backing up Rudy Gobert. Majority of his minutes are going to be at center, but that 12 rebounds per 36 minutes, Davis is going to come in the game and back up Rudy, and I don't think the Jazz are going to have any slippage. This is a big reason why I'm not as concerned about the loss of Derek Favors as some fans are, because I think that Ed Davis is an underrated center. He's probably going to be the best backup center in the NBA this year, where Derek Favors has held that title, and he's going to be a starter in New Orleans now. Last season, Davis averaged 5.8 points per game and 8.6 rebounds with the Nets, and this is going to be his sixth NBA team. He was a lottery pick his rookie year with Portland. It might have been Toronto that took him in the lottery, but he's played with Portland, Toronto, Memphis, the Lakers, and Brooklyn last season, as I mentioned. He is limited offensively, but he brings an incredibly high motor, excellent defense, and good rebounding, like I talked about. He's not going to give the Jazz a lot of versatility. I don't expect him to play power forward a whole lot. He's really going to be limited to the backup center position. He doesn't have great hands, but he's got that ability to get rebounds and go back up with it. That's where he gets a majority of his points, is on putbacks, on offensive rebounds. But the thing about Ed Davis that I love is he knows what type of a player he is. Sometimes you get former lottery picks who come in and they want a big role because they think that's who they are. And in the NBA, everybody's great, and you're not always going to get that role. Ed Davis understands who he is. He's going to come in. He'll play his backup center minutes. He's going to play his heart out. And I just think he's going to be a great addition to this team, and Jazz fans are going to grow to love Ed Davis as the season progresses. Now we'll take a look at Jeff Green, an addition from the Jazz, played with the Washington Wizards last year. He's entering his 12th season, his first with the Jazz. He's the second most experienced Jazz player behind Mike Conley. The Jazz are going to be Jeff Green's eighth team. He's played for Oklahoma City, Boston, Memphis, Cleveland, Washington, Orlando, and the Clippers. The thing about Jeff Green is he's a streaky shooter, but he can really fill it up when he gets going. He's hit as many as 8 threes in a game, and multiple times in his career has hit 6 threes in a game. Also, I think an underrated aspect of Jeff Green is that he's the only Jazz player with finals experience coming into this season. He played in the finals with LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2018. As I mentioned, he's kind of a streaky shooter. I expect the Jazz to have the depth to be able to sit Jeff Green if he's having a poor shooting game or isn't bringing the energy that he needs to bring. That's kind of been a knock on Jeff Green throughout his career, that he doesn't always bring 100% every night. So that'll be something to watch for with Jazz fans. But like I said, the Jazz with their depth, if he's not giving that effort or he's not hitting his shots, they don't have to rely on him to play big minutes every night. He's got the length and athleticism to defend every front court position, the threes, the fours, and even most centers. I expect Jeff Green. I've mentioned the Jazz have depth in 7 or 8 starters. I think Jeff Green's going to be one of those guys. He's going to pick up some starts at power forward, whether it be for injury or for load management. And that's just going to be a matchup-dependent type of thing. But I do think Quinn Snyder is going to be able to utilize Jeff Green's strengths and really help him give some good minutes to the Utah Jazz this season. And the last front court player that we're going to talk about with NBA experience so far is Tony Bradley. He's entering his third season. He was acquired by the Jazz in the 2017 NBA draft from the Los Angeles Lakers with the 28th pick. The Jazz bought that pick. He really hasn't contributed much to the Jazz in his career through the first 2 years. He suffered a knee injury in training camp last year and missed a lot of time with the Salt Lake Stars. But in 44 games with the G League Stars, he averaged 14.5 points per game, 8.7 rebounds in 27.5 minutes. This is the first year that he's really going to be expected to contribute to the Jazz and remain with the team throughout the entire season. He played 12 games with them last year, a few in his rookie season. But like I said, hasn't contributed a whole lot so far, but he penciled in for a role. And if Tony Bradley can step up and be a productive third center in that Epe Udo role, Jazz fans have seen it where he's not necessarily going to get a lot of time, but when you need him to play, he's got to come in and be ready. If Rudy goes out with an injury for a game, Ed Davis comes down with the flu or something like that, you're going to need Tony Bradley to be a good contributor here. Really, at the center position, I think this is my only question mark for the Jazz, where I wonder if they have the depth that they need. If Tony Bradley has developed, then they're in great shape. From my observations at practice and over the summer, it looks like Tony Bradley's dropped some weight. He's moving a little bit better after he's gotten over those knee injuries that caused him to miss several games in the G League. And like I said, he just needs to show some progress to stay with this team all season. If he can show his development, then he'll be with the Jazz and be a contributor. If not, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Jazz move on from Tony Bradley after this season. We appreciate you joining us on Name Change Pending today. Make sure and jump on Twitter. Follow your hosts Brian Priest at bpriest24, Tommy Girone at ruthless_lupe, and Josh Keel at riseandshout. Also, we know that you're busy, but if you could take 2 minutes out of your day and give us a 5-star rating on your podcatcher of choice, that would be so amazing. Help us move up those algorithms. I don't totally understand how they work, but I know with some 5-star ratings, the podcast shows up higher on the lists. And we want to help other people find the show, don't we? Doesn't really matter what you say for us. Maybe suggest some new verses for Ruthless Lupe. But thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for more episodes of Name Change Pending. Welcome back to Name Change Pending. This is your host, Brian Priest. Now we're going to take a quick look at the rookies coming into training camp with the Utah Jazz and in front court. We'll start with Jarrell Brantley. He's a rookie. He's 6'7", 255-pound forward, 23 years old. Last year, he averaged 19.4 points, 2.4 assists, 8.4 rebounds, and 1.3 steals per game at the College of Charleston. He signed a two-way contract with the Jazz after being acquired in a draft night trade with the Indiana Pacers. Brantley's likely to spend most of his season in the G League. He's a rangy athlete that's looking to develop his skills and just become a better player to hopefully see some NBA time in coming seasons. But he's not likely to see much time with the Jazz this year outside of training camp. Up next, we've got Stanton Kidd. He's entering his first season. He's 6'8", 225 pounds, 27 years old. Last year, he played 30 games for Darussafaka Tekfen. Darussafaka? I don't know. Darussafaka Tekin in the EuroLeague last season. He averaged 6.8 points, 3 rebounds, 1.2 assists, and 21.8 minutes per game last year. He signed a partially guaranteed contract this season with 2 additional non-guaranteed years after this. Kid is another person who's going to be looking to make some hay in the G League. He does have a partially guaranteed deal, so the Jazz are high on him, but it's just going to be tough to crack this roster. If he does, he's going to be an end-of-the-bench guy that the Jazz are trying to develop along the lines of George Niang and Royce O'Neal, two guys we talked about earlier today. We move on to William Howard, another kid out of France, joining Rudy Gobert. He is a rookie, 6'8", 205 pounds, and 25 years old. He played 5 full seasons professionally in France, averaged last year 9.5 points, 4.1 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 1.2 steals in 25 minutes. He also signed a partially guaranteed contract this year and then 2 non-guaranteed years after this, the same as Stanton Kidd. The Jazz liked him enough to guarantee some money and give him that partially guaranteed 3-year deal, but he's going to have the opportunity to learn from the end of the bench. He's probably also going to spend some time in the G League, but don't look for him to contribute a whole lot for the big team this year. And then lastly, we've got Juwan Morgan. Morgan is also a rookie out of Indiana. He's 6'8", 232 pounds, 22 years old, averaged 15.5 points, 8.2 rebounds, and 1.9 assists per game last year for the Hoosiers. He played 4 years at Indiana, and he signed one of those Exhibit 10 contracts with the Jazz, where if he makes the G League team, then he'll get a roster bonus and things like that. But what Juwan Morgan is hoping to do is he's just looking to make an impact in training camp, turn some heads, and get noticed a little bit, and then find his way onto the Salt Lake Stars G League roster this season. So that wraps up our Jazz roster analysis, and then Monday I'm going to finish off this Jazz preseason preview. Just I'm going to go over everything that I think the Jazz are going to be trying to do this year, playing time and things like that. I'm not going to make a prediction since I'm covering the team now, but I will be able to with that coverage that and access that I've got. We'll include some sound clips there and some interviews with players and coaches, and hopefully get you a real nice in-depth primer for the 2019-20 NBA season, in which the Jazz could be in for some really big things. Stay tuned to Name Change Pending. This is your host, Brian Priest. Find me on Twitter at bpriest24. Thank you for joining.